Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of Fresh Off the Counter After Being Left Out Overnight, Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the movies segment. Don't forget to listen to this stuff yesterday and the day before yesterday. So if the day after tomorrow is called overmorrow, would the day before yesterday be called undermorrow?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. We're brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, your destination for new and used video games. With membership options for every budget, plus their store carries Lego products and some of the most popular arcade one-up cabinets. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one, or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Oh, I'm out of breath. Justin, tell me about a party.
Hit! Oh, are you ready? Get... Stupid drummers. Hit it!
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? It was a summer day in 1985. I was at my babysitter's watching TV. Then she came in. Little Susie. She sat down next to me. We watched show after show after show. I fell in love. Foolishly, I thought it would last forever. Then suddenly, she left me. For Jimmy. Apparently, the allure of the seesaw was too much for her, and I've never been the same since. I mean, I forgot to pay the electric bill and the power went out. Yeah, that's it. No other reason. So this month, I watched a show called The Bureau of Magical Things, an Australian show from 2018. Now, based on the title alone, I knew there was going to be some magic involved. But I'm not even a minute in, and my suspension of disbelief is shattered. We see young Kira going out for a nighttime run. Now, as everyone knows, people who run when not in danger are pompous and need an audience. Mm-hmm. That's why they run during the day, not at night. So already I'm pulled out of the fiction. Anyway, she's running along and spots a mysterious, glowing, and floating book in the park. She approaches it, touches it, and gets zapped about 10 feet backwards. She wakes up in her bed and a young woman standing over her. This is startling for both girls. This person shouldn't be in Kira's house, and Kira shouldn't be able to see this person. Apparently. The young woman gets flustered, sprouts wings, shrinks, and flies out the window. At this point, we jump back in time to that morning, without telling us that's what they're doing. We formally meet Kira, a high school student, basketball player, friend, and daughter of single dad cop Mick Works a Lot. We also meet the winged girl, Lily. She's a fairy. Apparently there is a secret school in a bookstore that teaches magical creatures how to use their powers properly. It's her, another fairy, and two elves. One of them, Imogene, doesn't like fairies. This is evident by the fact that she's a total bitch. They're reminded by their professor that there's a test on Wednesday and they should utilize one specific book to study. That night, Imogene tries to steal the book but is caught by Lily. The chase is on and they end up in the park, where a magical tug-of-war ensues. To the casual passerby, it would appear as if a book is floating and glowing. And the casual passerby, I mean Kara. Touch, zap, and we're caught up to present. The next morning, Kara wakes up and goes to her job as a dog walker. While she's out, she discovers that she can talk to dogs. Later, she discovers that she can levitate things. Lily and Imogene have a heated argument about whose fault it is and what the other is going to do about it. They decide to wipe Kira's memory because humans can't know about magic. They track her down, explain what happened, and try to make her forget. It doesn't work because fairies can't have their memories altered, and Kira is now displaying fairy attributes. She's also displaying elven abilities as well. This manifests when she accidentally opens a portal, falls in, and ends up on a snowy mountaintop. Credits.
Ha. All right.
This is a show for kids, and I know because the acting is stilted, the story is predictable and kind of dull, and the characters are two-dimensional at best. I've watched Power Rangers episodes that are better than this.
Ooh.
Now for my prediction. Lily and Imogene track down where Kira ended up. Realizing this is the perfect solution to their problem, they leave her on the mountain to perish. Kira turns out to be more resourceful than expected and survives, stalking the mountains year after year, growing more and wild and less human. Stories begin to circulate about the mountain folk of a wild human-like creature. You know it's close by when the smell in the air and the tracks in the snow. On cold nights, you can hear it howl in the wind. The locals call it the Yeti, but we know it as Kira. I give it 2 mysterious floating books in the woods, which you should clearly not touch, out of 5. That's a Phineas and Ferb reference, if you don't know.
Well, thank you, Justin. I appreciate you putting yourself on the line for our entertainment.
Yeah, I foolishly took an approach of randomly selecting a TV show to watch rather than, oh, I haven't seen this one. Let's try this.
Ooh.
So I'm going to be in for some doozies from now on.
That randomizing things really just plays a number on you sometimes.
It does.
It's all right, though. You ready to hear some one-liners about some trailers that I've watched recently?
Sure.
Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. A visual treat that's going to require a Disney Plus account in order to understand it. Jurassic World Dominion. Is this movie trying to be Godzilla? Or a revival of the original Jurassic Park? Or the conclusion to a series of movies that were never really meant to be put together?
Yes.
I don't know, and that scares me.
Yes.
Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. What the f***? Firestarter. It looks closer to the book, but I still prefer Drew Barrymore.
Who doesn't?
Nope. Well, this looks fun. No, it doesn't. No, this does not look fun. Nope is accurately named. A Day to Die. For something trying to be exciting, I got bored watching the trailer.
Oof.
Hmm.
After Yang. Hey, you remember the Star Trek Next Generation episode where they have to prove that Data is sentient?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is that, only slower and less funny.
Aw.
Men. Well, that trailer left everything to the imagination. It's creepy, but that's all I know. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 looks just as good as the first one. Love seeing Jim Carrey acting like classic Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And classic as in like Ace Ventura kind of energy, not, right. You know, the before that stuff. Anyway, Downton Abbey, A New Era. You know, I didn't watch the TV show, yet I'm strangely compelled by the movie trailer. Like, might need to watch 5 seasons worth of Downton Abbey just to better understand the movie. Yeah. Panama. Movie looks fine. Trailer sounds terrible. Like, it sounds like 2009 Geek Cave audio.
Oh.
Oh. All right, that's what the trailer sounds like.
Oh,
can you understand what they're saying? Yeah, you can. But I don't know who was in charge of their sound mixing, but no good. Elvis. So imagine if Moulin Rouge and the Romeo plus Juliet, you know, that had Leonardo DiCaprio. Imagine if those two movies had a baby, visually, stylistically. That's what this looks like as it chronicles Elvis's rise to stardom. But it's got Tom Hanks in it, so probably be all right.
Yeah.
There were a lot more trailers, but quite honestly, those are the funniest ones. Most of the things. There is a lot of horror movie and thriller and suspense movies coming out. Holy crap. I would have thought we'd be tired of all that by now.
You would think, but here we are.
Here we are. Oh, well. Let me ask you guys a question. Actually, I'm going to ask you to... It's a multiple choice, so... There are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some lie just buried in the dust of centuries. This segment of the show, I will ask you about one such forgotten piece of television history and ask, should we review it? It was good then, the original's just as good now. Should we reboot it? The idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Should we revive it? What are these characters doing now after a couple of decades of growth? Or refuse it? Chad, we'd rather see disco make a comeback. It is New Year's Day, 1998. Not yet old enough to be hungover from the New Year's Eve party. We pop on the television to see what's what. It's still the 90s, so let's watch some music videos on MTV. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Instead, we're treated to a bizarre, inexplicable wrestling match during which we see what looks like Marilyn Manson fighting Charles Manson to the death, all rendered in glorious claymation.
Yes!
This is Celebrity Deathmatch. Running from 1998, guys, all the way to 2007 with some with like a 2-year break in the middle there. Celebrity Deathmatch took cues from the world of professional wrestling and gave us all the drama, the plot twist, and the excitement we could handle, complete with crazy amounts of violence and all the cartoony claymation gore we could handle as some of our favorite and most popular Hollywood stars fought to the death for our entertainment. I mean, who could forget Jim Carrey's head being exploded by Mariah Carey's voice? Or when Mick Jagger stabbed Steven Tyler with his tongue? I will never forget the match that saw Paul McCartney versus John Lennon versus George Harrison versus Ringo Starr. The show had its ups and downs, several guest voices, and a strange fan base that just kept it running. So what say you guys? Review, reboot, revive, refuse. Let's get it on!
I loved that they got the actual Judge Mills Lane to be the referee for that show.
Yes. For all but the last two seasons.
Yeah.
He had suffered a stroke or he had some kind of health issue. But he did give his blessing to the guy that took his place.
Well, and they gave, they had some of the celebs like legit perform as themselves. I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes, he was.
You know, oh my gosh. As someone who's a wrestling geek, I loved Celebrity Deathmatch. And as someone who is still a wrestling geek, I still love Celebrity Deathmatch. And, you know, I haven't seen it in so long, but it just... Thinking about it and that the wonderful claymation animation, which was done so well, it just warms the cockles of my heart. Revive it. Revive it. There's plenty of celebrities that can get into fights right now. Let's just bring it back. I mean, we've got lip sync battles going on. We've got like masked singer, someone like dressed as a stupid giant pigeon or something. Why can't we have celebrity deathmatch? Let's do it.
This is one of those shows that I remember coming across just late one night, flipping through and going, what the f- is this? Much like its predecessors in that vein for me, Aeon Flux, The State, The Max, those sorts of things. And I loved it. I never knew exactly when it was going to be on, but damn it, when it was, I watched it. And I remember exactly the Beatles one.
Yeah.
That you're talking about.
Looking back at like 1977 or something like that.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of on the fence about it. I mean, definitely rewatch it because it's fun just to go back and watch that shit. But I was on the fence about revive it because it's like, you know, there's a lot of violence in the world, but it's a cartoon. It's cartoony violence.
Yeah.
There is a difference. It is not gory in a realistic sense. I agree with Darren. Revive it, bring it back. Let's have some fun.
This one to me fits more in the revive than the review, just because the actors now have changed enough since 2007. You know, sure, you could still do Dwayne Johnson. You know, he was in that back then as The Rock. You know, you could do a pretty great celebrity death match of The Rock versus Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? Yes.
And it'd be glorious, you know. So, as long as they kept to the, I guess, I don't want to so much say the innocent, but, like, to make sure that it's ironic, you know? The Jim Carrey
That's
versus
fair.
Mariah
yeah.
Carey, it was ironic, you know? When you had Oprah Winfrey versus Rosie O'Donnell versus Jerry Springer. You know, they were all doing those kind of daytime talk show things at the, you know, to make that worked. So I would want to see more of that kind of stuff, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but yeah, I was thinking, you know, what's something that you guys might have some fond memories of?
Oh yeah.
You know, we would drink to this in college. You know, sit around and just like, oh, you place your bets. Where you'd have, you know, quote unquote good beer, which in college meant like Budweiser, Bud Light, and then you had the Keystone Light, Natty Light stuff, and you'd bet, and whoever won got to drink the good beer, and whoever, you know, because you go in together, everybody throws in $5, you just, it's fun.
Now you could, if they revived it, they could totally do something like that. But social media, you know, you could really get in on the whole, like, hey, you know, tweet us a hashtag or whatever on who you think's going to win.
Uh huh.
I mean, there's a lot of legs here.
Oh yeah, a lot of places this could go. But I want it to be a self-contained show as well, like they did then. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, we got three fights on the cards. The whole thing is done claymation. You didn't have a host who was a real live person, you know, saying, all right, now we're going to get into the fight or something.
That's fair.
No. Yeah.
Because there was talk about doing that where it's going to be like Ice Cube was going to host Celebrity Deathmatch. I'm like,
just keep it all claymation. Keep it.
And find me some wrestling announcers or boxing announcers that really get into it.
I volunteer as tribute.
All right. Darren Wright will do it. He's even got his own studio set up right there in the house.
I will do it, and I will be competent.
All right. So moving on to some reviews. I got a couple of them. Have you guys been watching anything or seen anything lately that deserves a review?
Finished Book of Boba Fett, otherwise known as Mandalorian 2.5.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And is, you know, I liked it. I liked it okay as a Boba Fett series. I really liked it when the Mandalorian did some things that I won't say any further because spoilers. But overall, it's a solid watch. Superman and Lois is still good. I think it's on hiatus at the time of this taping, but I am pleasantly surprised that the CW has not managed to screw this up yet.
Maybe it'll just stay on hiatus and it'll Firefly out.
I don't want a cliffhanger, but like, it's good so far.
Well, that's good then.
Me personally, no, I haven't really been caught catching up on much.
Right on. As of this recording, you know, The Legend of Vox Machina has concluded its first season. And so here's the thing. For those who are fans and familiar with Critical Role, it's really great. There are plenty of winks and nods to the live play RPG that are sure to keep the critters happy. For those who are not longtime fans of the show or that don't know the world of Matthew Mercer, it's only good. The characters are good, and it seems that each has a bit of screen time to develop them, but let's be honest, you cannot condense 57 hours worth of content into 12 half-hour episodes of a campaign without losing something. You know, the Avatar, The Last Airbender movie learned that.
Ugh.
You can't condense that much entertainment down to a small amount. In this case, the characters that are fully fleshed out of on the tabletop are turned into caricatures of themselves. So, like, yeah, Scanlan's the stereotypical horny bard, but his character was so much more at the table, but that depth can only be hinted at during the show. So I enjoyed watching it. As long as you don't want to get too invested in the characters, it's a pretty decent story. Animation's really good. The voice work is excellent, as you might expect from the cast. And the plot works, even if radically condensed. I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, but if you're a D&D geek or a Critical Role geek, it's worth giving it a look-see. I'm giving it a B+. The next one I watched this month was Reacher on Amazon Prime. Lee Childs has written a truly astonishing number of Reacher novels. They're popular action-adventure stories, the same way that Clive Cussler's Dirk Pitt is. You know, he found a character and he just keeps on using him. A huge individual that seemingly has superhuman abilities to draw on in every situation. It's power fantasy, you know, for guys who look like us to want to feel powerful. Previously played by Tom Cruise in some movies. Here, Reacher's played by Alan Ritchson, who previously played Aquaman in Smallville.
Okay.
The series, made for Amazon Prime, adapts Child's first Reacher novel, Killing Floor, over the course of 9 episodes. And in the story, Reacher, a retired member of the armed forces, is unintentionally drawn into a murder mystery in the small town of Margrave, Georgia, when he is arrested for a murder he could not have committed. When the victim turns out to be Reacher's brother, the mystery becomes personal, and Reacher stays to make sure that those who killed his brother pay for it with their lives. It's pretty well-made thriller action series, you know. Some of the fight scenes flirt with the line of being too grotesque, but after a couple of episodes, that tone's way down. Obvious bad guys throughout the show, and just enough twists in the narrative to keep things interesting. It's not going to reinvent the medium, but it was well worth the time spent watching it. I'm giving it an A-, you know, nearly an A, but a couple of late episode decisions just didn't land for the character that they created. So. By the way, if you like blues music, there are plenty of good decisions made in the soundtrack.
Sweet.
So, that is all I've got for reviews and bits and so forth. So I think it's time
ooh.
For the...
Ooh, ooh, ooh,
yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, Darren.
One more thing.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, so in the Disney Pixar movie Up, which I trust you've both seen.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, a man uses a bunch of balloons filled with helium to lift his house into the air and travel halfway across the world. How many balloons did he use? Well, according to Pixar animators, 10,297 to be precise, and each one was animated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did the math. And that's all I got on that.
They did the math. Hmm. Well, in that case, random movie review time. Sir Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, next month should be Joker. Huh. This month, I watched the 2017 comedy heist movie, Going in Style. I'm not going to use the character names through this. All right? I'm going to use the actor names. Because once I give the actors names, you're going to understand why I'm using the actors' names. We open with Michael Caine walking into a bank and learning that his pension has not been deposited into his account for the last several months. This has put him in danger of losing his home, a home that he lives in with his daughter and his granddaughter. And while learning about this from a quite smarmy banker, three gentlemen walk in and rob the bank. One happens to interact with Caine and the smarmy banker. And Caine sees a tattoo on the robber's neck and the banker wets his pants. An excellent opening. Come a few days later, we find out that the company that Caine had worked for through his career had merged or sold with another company, and they were sending the whole thing to, you know, outsourcing it. And the pension that they had paid into was a casualty of that merger, leaving Michael Caine and his two best friends, Morgan Freeman and Alan Alda, high and dry with no recourse or recompense. As such, it was learned that the bank was effectively going to steal that money from the pensioners and keep it. After his experience with the bank, Caine floats the idea of robbing the joint. I think I want to rob the bank, gents. But they're not thieves. But they don't really have anything to lose either. So they decide to try it. They're gonna try it. But first, you have to walk before you can swim. Or something like that. So they decide to practice by robbing the local supermarket. Probably the high point of this movie. There are a few high points. It's a good movie, but Alan Alda is sitting in the car with Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine. He's going over the shopping list because he wants to make chicken parmesan for dinner. Michael Caine takes the list away from Alan Alda, tears it in half, gives half of it to Morgan Freeman, and the two of them are going to go into the store and steal the groceries necessary in order to have chicken parmesan for dinner that night.
Okay.
Actually, it's Alan Arkin.
Arkin?
Alan Alda was the guy from MASH.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for... That's what happens when you just rely on, you know, one website to tell you things. Alan Arkin. All right, I'm just going to call him Alan.
Which puts the movie in a whole different perspective.
Well, and now it's a lot funnier. Yeah, definitely funnier now. I apologize to everybody in that. Anyway, so Alan is supposed to stay outside. He's supposed to be the getaway driver, but he goes inside anyway. While this is going on, we're treated to this wonderful sequence of Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman stuffing like bags of flour into their suit, you know, suit jackets, like in their chest. And Morgan Freeman saying to Michael Caine is like, I don't want chicken. I want a roast. Roast isn't part of the plan. Yeah, I'm going to get a roast. And so the next shot is him at the butcher shop getting like the whole pork roast and trying to shove it down his pants. They get caught. Because of course they get caught.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But at this point, the film changes from one that's kind of grounded in reality, you know, to pure fantasy. And it's such a deft shift that it works in the context of it. Like, it doesn't have a tonal shift. It's just you flip the switch in your head. It's like, okay, everything from here on out is like Home Alone. You know, Home Alone is a wonderful grounded movie right up until the bells ring on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
So they need help. They need help. They need to track down some help in the form of a lowlife who can point them to a criminal who can teach them how to crime. That's what they need. The middle third of the movie is the training leading up to the eventual heist itself. It goes the way it goes. They get away with the money because, of course, they do. It's that kind of movie. Couple of dramatic points here with witnesses and such, but the movie, it's an upbeat comedy. It should be watched as one. Fun fact, it's actually a remake of a George Burns movie.
Okay.
So this is a safe movie. As in, it's not trying to do anything particularly new or exciting. It's counting on its three leading characters to be charismatic and likable, which they are. The humor is easygoing, and the moments of danger and tension, well, they don't really land as effectively as they maybe should. So, you're not really going to be too much on the edge of your seat. Still, it was fun. It was a refreshing comedy that doesn't demand too much from the audience, but also doesn't bore us with empty scenes and characters. So this one's a B like me. Are there any further business?
No, I can't. All right. Have any.
Well, then thanks to our sponsors, Shortersource and Gamefly. Find geeky news, etc. at geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversation, and then tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? And the Week 3 Podcast. Then head on over to twitch.tv/geekcavepodcast to see Darren play some video games, or find our YouTube channel and see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. So for Kent Harris, our Captain Janeway, professional and steely, Darren Wright, our Captain Kirk, the OG, Justin White, our Captain Picard, because he'd kill me if I put him anywhere else. I'm Chad Savage as Han Solo. What the hell is a phaser? Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.